You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world.
Okay, we're going. We are on section 140, the essential occurrence of bang in Heidegger's book, Contributions to Philosophy of the Event.
What? Yes.
Any news?
The baby is 3 weeks old today.
Yeah.
We actually podcasted last week.
Huh?
We podcasted when he was 2 weeks old, too.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the baby's doing well.
Yeah.
And summer's coming.
Yeah.
And you're feeling healthy?
Mm-hmm.
You can't get in the pool yet, but
yes.
You'll get in soon, right?
Yes.
And we're getting some sleep.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but
yeah.
Could be worse.
Yeah.
But the baby's healthy and you're healthy, and that's the way.
Yes.
Things should be.
Yes.
All right. So you ready to start?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
140. The essential occurrence of bang. If being, beingness is not explained through the expedient of positing a first cause of all beings, a cause which causes itself, if beings as such are not dissolved into objectivity and beingness in turn is not explained through the representation of objects and through their a priori, and if bang itself is to come to occur essentially, and yet all kinds of beings in themselves are to be kept aloof from it, then the necessary presupposition is a meditation which endures the abandonment by being as a plight. To this meditation, the following will be clear. The truth of being, and thus being itself, essentially occurs only where and when Dasein occurs. Dasein is only where and when the being of truth occurs. A turning, indeed, the turning, which indicates precisely the essence of being itself as the event that oscillates in itself. In itself, the event grounds Dasein. Dasein grounds the event. Here, grounding is reciprocally turning. One, bearing, protruding. Two, instituting, projecting.
Okay, yeah.
That's a section.
Yeah. So we have in the start, he puts forth a list of what I would say are ideal epistemological stances or circumstances. All of it being the fruits of a meditation that endures the abandonment by being as a plight. So if we meditate in a way that endures the abandonment by being as a plight, so in other words, our meditation, our thinking, our inceptual thinking stays steadfast in the presupposition, in the approach, based on the position that we have been abandoned by being, and that is our plight, and the meditation resides and is imbued with that concept, with that positionality, with that disposition, as a way, then we will get the following things, or rather, these things need to happen well, some of these things need to happen in order for us to meditate this way, and some of these things will come about from this meditation. So let's look at each one. If being or beingness is not explained through the expedient of positing a first cause of all beings. So that's the first thing. So we are going to abandon the practice of explaining being as having to do with some kind of cause of all causes, making it a kind of a divine or a preeminent or an a priori force that causes everything.
And I feel like he's saying this is our tendency, or yes, first beginning tendency is to do this. So if we cannot do it,
definitely, then, yeah, that's right. If beings as such are not dissolved into objectivity, and beingness in turn is not explained through the representation of objects and through their a priori, so if we don't do that as well, we don't dissolve beings into objectivity, and we don't explain beingness through the representation of objects and through their a priori, and if bang itself, and here's the sort of fruit of the meditation, is to come to occur essentially, and yet all kinds of beings in themselves are to be kept aloof from it. And that, I'm not sure, I don't immediately get. Then the necessary presupposition is a meditation which endures the abandonment by being as a plate. So,
yeah, it might hinge on, like, what is aloof, actually?
Yeah.
What's the actual word there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, bang is the event. And I think what he's saying here is, if the event is to come to occur, essentially, yet we are to make sure not to ascribe each instance of bang beinghood. Mm. Bang must remain in its own conceptual path or corner, as it were. And we need to understand that bang and beings are not the same thing. That being does not inhabit bang or preempt bang or reside in bang. Beings and bang are aloof from each other in that they're not the same thing, and they need to be distinguished. And then it says, to this meditation, the following will be clear. So here are some things that this meditation that endures the abandonment by being as a plight will see as clear. The truth of being essentially occurs only where and when Dasein occurs. So Dasein, or in a sense human consciousness, makes the truth of being, and thus being itself, occur. Dasein is only where and when the being of truth occurs. So Dasein only exists where truth has being. A turning, indeed the turning, which indicates precisely the essence of being itself as the event that oscillates in itself. So the turning is the essence of being as an event oscillating in itself. Oscillating means to turn or spin. So you have this picture kind of the event coming and going, the essence of being, or what is, being present in the event, and the event kind of spinning or oscillating into being and then out of being, right? In itself, the event grounds Dasein, and Dasein grounds the event. So that, too, is a reciprocal turning, things grounding each other, the event grounding Dasein and Dasein grounding the event. The bearing protruding and the instituting projecting. So the giving forth, they give each other forth, and they institute or found and project each other into existence. Yeah?
Yeah. Is he saying, in itself, the event grounds Dasein, here grounding as reciprocally turning? Is that what the one... Oh, wait, sorry. No, bearing protruding. Sorry. Is that what the one means, too? In itself, the event grounds Dasein, bearing protruding. Dasein grounds the event, instituting projecting.
Well, yeah. I wonder if there's a connection between those Might numbers. Be. Yeah.
I'm not sure how essential it is to follow that, but...
Well, okay, let's pursue that. In itself, the event grounds Dasein, bearing protruding. So it almost seems as if the event bearing, I guess it could be birthing or gives birth mm-hmm. to, or it could be
carrying.
Protruding. I mean, it seems that the event provides a basis for and creates an extension of Dasein, sort of sticks Dasein out, protrudes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Dasein grounds the event, so Dasein institutes the event and projects it. Mm-hmm. You know, experiences the presence of the event and then projects it outward into time and space. Yeah. I guess that all seems fairly clear, right?
Yeah, yeah. Do we want to do another section?
Another section?
Yeah.
I think we should, yeah.
It's short.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
141, the essence of Bang. The appropriation of Dasein by Bang and the grounding of the truth of being in Dasein, the turning in the event, is not contained exclusively either in the call, the remaining absent, or in the belonging, abandonment, by being, nor does it reside in both together. For these two themselves, and both together, are first attained in the oscillation of the event. Within the event itself oscillates in the oscillation. The trembling of this coming to be of the oscillation in the turning of the event is the most concealed essence of Bang. This concealment is cleared as concealment only in the deepest clearing of the sight of the moment, in order to occur essentially in this seldomness and uniqueness. Bang needs Dasein, and Dasein grounds being human in its ground.
Is its ground,
insofar as the human being, in withstanding Dasein, grounds Dasein through steadfastness.
Hmm. Hmm. So as Dasein is appropriated by Bang and the grounding of the truth of being in Dasein. So as the truth of being is grounded in Dasein and Dasein is appropriated by Bang. The turning in the event is not contained exclusively either in the call or in the belonging. So the subject here is really the turning in the event. And he's saying that as Dasein is appropriated by Bang, and the truth of being is grounded in Dasein, so we have an establishment of Dasein's integral role in being and Bang, then we have this around Dasein, or sort of in relation to Dasein, we have the turning in the event. But this is not contained, this turning is not solely contained in the call or in the belonging. So we have this, the call, the remaining absent, or in the belonging, abandonment by being. So Dasein's belonging to the event, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is due to the abandonment by being. And the call, or the call is essentially the call to the abandonment by being as plight, right? And the remaining, the call is the remaining absent. And I kind of feel like, you know, if the call is to the abandonment by being as plight, then the call is kind of a what occurs in the condition in which we are absent to ourselves and to Bang. We get the call. You know, I mean, in a sense, it's like, okay, you get the call to go on a mission, right? That's because you're absent from where the mission is going to take you, and you've remained absent from it. So I think it's sort of like that. And the turning in the event does not reside in both together, for these two themselves and both together are first attained in the oscillation of the event. So the oscillation of the event is prior to these two. Within the event itself oscillates in the oscillation. So the event, inside the event turns in the turning. So again, I think that the best way to think about turning and oscillation here is sort of that, you know, an event emerges out of nothing, is for a bit, and then fades back into nothing. So it's kind of a, imagine you're facing the sun, and then you turn and you do not face the sun anymore. You face away from the sun, and then you finally turn back to the sun. That's kind of the way the event oscillates. And of course, so the event oscillates in itself by doing that, but then the event also oscillates within the context in which it occurs. So it oscillates vis-a-vis Dasein, right? So it's spin. It's in a sense, it's like the moon that is spinning around the earth that is spinning around the sun. The trembling of this coming to be of the oscillation, so as the event turns in the turning of the event, is the most concealed essence of Bang. Yeah, it's the mystery of why things happen at all. This concealment is cleared as concealment. In other words, it comes to be known or comes to be seen as concealment. Oh, there's the baby. Only in the deepest clearing of the sight of the moment. So as the moment occurs, as the event occurs in the moment, there is a clearing, and the event occurs, and the concealment of why the event occurs or how it occurs, occurs in that clearing. In order to occur essentially in this seldomness and uniqueness, so it seldom happens and it's always unique, Bang needs Dasein, because Dasein lends it the sense of being. And only through being can it be seldom and unique. And Dasein grounds being human, is its ground, insofar as the human being, in withstanding Dasein, grounds Dasein through steadfastness. So Dasein is the part of the human that can be grounded, that grounds human being, because Dasein engages with the truth of being, and is appropriated by Bang, and this grounds being human. Otherwise, being human has no ground. And the human being, in withstanding Dasein, grounds Dasein. So the human being, in the sense of that it bears Dasein, that it remains constant to Dasein, loyal to Dasein, engages in Dasein with some consistency, is steadfastly faithful or engaged with Dasein. This grounds Dasein. just as Dasein grounds the human. So the human grounds Dasein, and Dasein grounds the human. So there are all these reciprocal groundings in this incessant internal oscillation of the event and of the truth of being and Bang and Dasein. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should read one more section.
Oh.
It's not too long.
Okay.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. 142, the essence of Bang. The trembling of the coming to be of the oscillation in the turning, the appropriation of the belonging, grounding, sheltering Dasein to the intimation. This essential occurrence of Bang is not itself the last God. Instead, the essential occurrence of being grounds the sheltering and thereby the creative preservation of the God who pervades Bang with divinity, always only in work and sacrifice, deed and thought. Hence thinking an inaugural...
As inaugural.
Hence thinking as inaugural of the other beginning also may come into the remote nearness of the last God. It does so through and in its self-grounding history, but never in the form of a result, i.e. in the form of a productive mode of representation which brings the God to shelter. All such claims, apparently the highest, are low and constitute a disparagement of Bang. The appropriating event and its joining in the abyss of time-space from the net in which...
Form.
The appropriating event and its joining in the abyss of time-space form the net in which the last God is self-suspended in order to rend the net and let it end in its uniqueness, divine and rare, and the strangest amid all beings. The sudden extinguishing of the great fire, this leaves behind something which is neither day nor night, which no one grasps, and in which humans, having come to the end, still bustle about so as to benumb themselves with the products of their machinations, pretending such products are made for all eternity, perhaps for that, and so forth, which is neither day nor night.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, getting a little poetic there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... He uses this word trembling, the trembling of the coming to be of the oscillation and the turning. So as the turning begins and comes to be, there's a trembling. There's a sense that something is happening. There's a feeling of a turning. There's an engagement with an oscillation. The trembling of the coming to be of the oscillation and the turning. The appropriation of the belonging, grounding, sheltering Dasein to the intimation. So all of this is, in a sense, Bang. In a sense, it's what happens as the event begins to engage and appropriate Dasein. Right? So then he says, this essential occurrence of Bang is not itself the last God. So these features of the essential occurrence of Bang that he just listed, this is not the last God. So we shouldn't ascribe, I guess, for lack of a better word, divinity or absoluteness to this oscillation, this engagement with Dasein, this relation between Dasein and the event. Instead, the essential currents of being grounds the sheltering and thereby the creative preservation of the God. So this process, the essential currents of being, provides a shelter or a preserve, creative preserve, for the God. It allows the God to exist, a venue or a site whereby the God can exist, who then pervades Bang with divinity, always only in work and sacrifice, deed and thought. So, Bang, as the event, appropriates Dasein, grounds Dasein, Dasein grounds the event in this reciprocal oscillation. And where is the God in all of that? Well, God pervades Bang with divinity through the basically human activities of work and sacrifice, an action or deed, and thought. So that's where the divinity of God emerges. Hence, thinking, as inaugural of the other beginning, also may come into the remote nearness of the last God. So thought, and he jumps right off the word thought into thinking, right? Thinking, or inceptual thinking, as he's called it, which will bring about the other beginning, brings us to a closeness to God, a remote closeness. Because God pervades Bang with the divinity through work and sacrifice, deed and thought. So in our inceptual thinking, we're actually engaging with God as he, she, or it saturates Bang with divinity. Thinking, next paragraph, it, thinking, does so through and in its self-grounding history, but never in the form of a result. It's not the results of thinking, like the conclusions or the outcomes of thinking. It's the process itself. In the form of a productive mode of representation, which brings the God to shelter. So, it is not a productive mode of representation that brings God into closeness or into a domesticated position vis-a-vis humans, makes God close to us. It's not the products of thought. And here he attacks such claims. These claims are low and disparage Bang, right? Mm-hmm. The appropriating event.
Sorry, which claims? The product?
Claims that. So. So thinking brings us close to God. Mm-hmm. And it does that through and in its self-grounding history. Mm-hmm. So, again, historical thinking, inceptual thinking, mm-hmm. self-grounding thinking, mm-hmm. thinking that is actively perusing and pervading time-space, this kind of thinking is what gets us close to God. And he juxtaposes that to result-oriented thinking, right? And basically, are you thinking that takes the form of a productive mode of representation mm-hmm. that brings the God to shelter? So in a sense, that shelter might be pejorative, sort of domesticates or cages the God, right? Mm-hmm. These claims disparage Bang. Claims that it is the productive mode of representation that brings the God to shelter, that is the kind of thinking that brings us close to God.
I see.
Right? That is a non-Bangish way of thinking about how thinking gets us close to God. Mm-hmm. I think in that paragraph there lies a sort of liberal, post-liberal distinction that we can visit once we start talking. Mm-hmm. But let's revisit that in a second. Mm-hmm. The appropriating event and its joining in the abyss of time abyss of time-space, form the net in which the last God is self-suspended, in order to rend the net and let it end in its uniqueness, divine and rare, and the strangest amid all beings. So that's a strong image. So the appropriating event and its joining in the abyss of time-space. So it's joining. What is the event appropriating? The event is appropriating Dasein. And it's joining the world of Dasein or the awareness of Dasein. Or it's joining existence, or it's conjoining or adjoining itself into existence in time space, right? That the mysterious cause of the oscillation, the concealment that emerges anytime any event occurs, right? It's in the abyss of time space. This turning, this appropriating, this joining in the abyss creates a kind of net in which the last God is sort of tied up or hanging there, right? Mm-hmm. And then it says, in order to rend the net, in order to tear the net up. Now, I don't know if it seems like maybe the God is self-suspended in the net in order to rend the net. Mm. So, and the reason for rending the net is that it can basically stop being, whereby it gains uniqueness, which is divine and rare and the strangest amidst all beings. So there seems to be an active role for the God, the last God, in this perpetual oscillating of the event, right? And this perpetual clearing, concealing of the event in the abyss of time-space. The event occurs, and then it stops occurring. It appropriates Dasein. Dasein grants it being, becomes aware of it. And this whole sort of web or net of deeply abyssal, concealed, clearing event happenings, right? Mm-hmm. Across time, in the abyss of time-space, is where the God sort of is self-suspended, can be seen to exist, can be seen to be. But the God is only there in order to continually tear that net up. So in other words, disintegrate it and remove it from being to keep it bang, intermittent, unique, strange, so that it can remain divine and rare and strange and unique. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the sudden extinguishing of the great fire I think to understand that we need to read on. This leaves behind something which is neither day nor night, which no one grasps, and which humans, having come to the end, still bustle about so as benumb themselves the products of their machinations. So the sudden extinguishing of the great fire, you know, probably just is a kind of mythologizing way of talking about probably the kind of divine and universal and mythological and magical power, the great fire being the sort of the furnace that creates time and space. And, you know, prior to whatever, you know, various eras, depending on the culture and the place, prior to, say, monotheism, or prior to modernity, prior to urbanity, prior to institutionalization, prior to society. You know, he's sort of pointing us back to a time when humans had a strong sense of there being this great fire, this great force, this great heat, this great generator of all things, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just a relationship with the sun. Mm. Maybe it's a more mythological relationship with the forces of nature. Maybe it's pre-Greek and it's a kind of animism or a pantheism or just a naturism that engages with the immediacy and the ever-changing generative force of nature, right? Mm-hmm. This has been extinguished, right? I mean, this is a common trope, poets and philosophers, people bemoaning modernity. And, you know, the Great Fire probably can be synonymous with the sun, the extinguishing of the sun. And, you know, it's probably kind of that, you know, things have become scientized. You know, we used to have a personal relationship with the sun or a divine relationship, right? And then that's left behind something that is neither day nor night. So the sun, in that way, is not there, and we live in a kind of non-relationship with day or night. So this kind of nothingness that we live in, this ambiguity, no one can grasp it. It's not really there. And humans, having come to the end, sort of not having that integral natural relationship anymore, bustle about trying to numb themselves with the products of their imaginations, pretending such products are made for all eternity, pretending they will last forever, they're what we will always need. Perhaps for that and for all eternity, perhaps for that and so forth, which is neither day nor night, and so forth, the rote, machinated progress, rolling along of social comfort, social goods, the shallow, banal, unthinking life that the philosophers find so embarrassing. Mm-hmm. So interesting images, right? Like, I mean, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, the sudden extinguishing of the Great Fire, you know, against standard mythological trope, but it's interesting to hear him using it, because it would seem as if he's relating the kind of demythologization of the world with the abandonment by being and with the loss of Bang and with the kind of machinated representational a priori objective thinking that, you know, productive modes of representation, right, that these are all part of our becoming numb to nature and unaware and kind of enclosed into ourselves, as if the products of our imagination are all we need. So we've become closed off, and I think Heidegger is very much a naturist, and he's trying to call us to relight the great fire, to find the divine, and also more importantly, well, not more importantly, but equally importantly, you know, to understand what this last God is doing. And it's a very strange description of a god, right?
Yeah.
A god hanging in a net in order to constantly destroy it.
Yeah.
It's very like Native American in a way,
yeah.
Right? Like it's such an active, physical, process or practice of for a god, it feels very pre-Christian, pre-Judeo-Christian, you know, this god. I mean, it's also very Indian. Mm-hmm. It's very like creator destroyer, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting that he is bringing divinity into it, you know, because he's got all this mapping of Bang and the oscillation and appropriating Dasein and grounding each other and inceptual thinking, and then, you know, somewhere out in this big system that he's building, this whole turning of the event in time space creates a net in which a god is sitting and tearing things up so that there can be uniqueness. And I think that's the most critical part, is that all this stuff he talks about in terms of machination and objectivity and the products of thought and a priori and being and, in a sense, liberalism and identity, this is all really, I think Heidegger would probably say, anti the last god being suspended in a net to rend the net. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you know, there's this tradition of God, the all good, God the preserver, God the solicitous, God the overlooker, God the caretaker, God the God of love, the God of constancy, the God of care, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Heidegger is saying that that is an extinguishment of the great fire. Mm-hmm. That is a little bit of a lie. That is a standardization or a neutering of the reality that things come and go, mm-hmm. that the event appropriates us and sort of pulls us into it, and things happen in a concealed manner out of the abyss of time and space, and nothing would occur. There would be no uniqueness. There would be nothing rare. There would be nothing strange. There would be nothing divine. There would be nothing individual. There would be nothing temporary, spontaneous. If this God was not out there, self-suspended, hanging out in the net, rending the net, breaking it up so that another net can be built. Mm. Right? So this is the active, natural, agitative reality of nature that Heidegger is saying should take preeminence in our thinking. And the liberal identitarian objectivity is a retreat from that. It's an avoidance. It's a fear of that. It's a safe space that tries to stay away from that, mm-hmm. because that is tempestuous and self-rending and scary and mm-hmm. and just a little too, you know, creative destructive. Mm-hmm. I think it points to what is perhaps liberalism's deepest flaw, which is that it suppresses and occludes and, frankly, misrepresents or is deceptive about reality, mm-hmm. because its core mission is stasis and comfort and dominion, in a way. Mm-hmm. But of course, it can never fully achieve that, mm-hmm. because events are constantly occurring. Liberalism wants the events to stop, wants the god to stop rending the net so that all the uniqueness and the strangeness and the stops, mm-hmm. because that's all very upsetting. It's very destabilizing. It just wants everything to be standardized so that it can be safe. Mm-hmm. And that's what identity is. Mm-hmm. Identity is the great lie that makes us the same over time so that we can say, well, at least I have myself to hold on to. Mm-hmm. At least I'm always here. At least I can control who I am, how I'm represented, how I represent. Of course, you can't do any of that. It's all a lie. You can't control any of that, but your compulsion is to try to control it. So the Great Fire has been extinguished by liberalism. And so we exist in a time where the Great Fire is neither burning bright, so it's day, or fully out. Because something that's extinguished can't burn bright, and something that's extinguished can't be out. Like, it's always out. It's gone, right? Day and night are the vacillation of something that's turned on. Mm-hmm. It's bright, and then it sleeps, and then it's bright, and then it sleeps. But neither of those occur now. Now we live in this thing that no one can really grasp. It's neither day nor night, in which we bustle about to numb ourselves with the products of our imaginations. And really, instead of living in the day and night that would be caused by the Great Fire, we live in the and so forth. Meaning we live in the inevitable and impressed upon grind of the system, whose goal is to keep us safe as liberals. Which, you know, I think if I had any kind of contemporary topic to discuss, you know, I mean, it was this week the great, you know, third assassination attempt. Mm. And, you know, everybody's talking about left-wing violence, et cetera, and you can have all these debates about whether left-wingers or right-wingers are more violent. But what we do know is that Trump has been president for about a year and a half, and we have seen a great upswing in leftist violence. They've tried to kill Trump three times. They killed Charlie Kirk. You know, you could say Luigi Mangione was left-wing violence because he's been celebrated by left-wingers. There's been school shootings, you know, people talk about there being trans violence, blah, blah, blah. There's burnings of Teslas, you know, the left has become violent. Mm-hmm. And to deny that is a joke. You're just a liar if you deny that. But they've only become violent. Well, they haven't only become violent, but they've become violent specifically in response to there being a president they do not like. Mm-hmm. And that's because that's an event. They don't like the oscillation of the event. They don't like that they had Obama for 8 years, and it seemed as if there was always going to be liberals. Mm-hmm. And liberalism, uber alles, and then there wasn't. And so they are averse. They are allergic to the event, allergic to the turning. Now, it may be when things swing back the other way, that's the phrase we use, right? Mm-hmm. That there will be violence from the right. There may be. I don't know. But violence seems to be a thing that liberals are more and more comfortable with. And there are polls that prove that. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of evidence that proves that. And that kind of leads to the other thing I was thinking about this week, which is communism, you know, Democratic Socialists of America, DSA, you know, it's everywhere now. And Hassan Piker's interview and micro-looting and you know, there are kinds of violence that are acceptable because their great injustices are occurring, and Hamas is a liberation organization, and, you know, on and on. Just constant excuses for and fetishization of and celebration of violence. It's becoming more and more common. Now, you know, it's probably just because we can see it, you know. Again, I've said before, if 9/11 had happened with social media around, mm-hmm. we would have gotten to see how many people were glad that 3,000 people were killed mm-hmm. in a terrorist attack. We would have been able to see that. It would have been very evident. My daughters probably would have celebrated it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's that personal. It's that close. Democrats have become that fascinated and encouraging of violence because they have a very solid theory of the world that involves injustices and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And of course, violence always requires a theory, and their theory works very well for that. Mm-hmm. It's very upsetting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of reminded of this 2014. And I guess Facebook had been around for a while. When did Facebook start? You were on Facebook in college, weren't you?
I think so.
Anyhow, I had resisted.
Yeah, I guess I had, yeah.
I had resisted
yeah.
sort of getting onto social media until 2014. Not really resisted it. I just wasn't really, I was just doing other things. And then I sort of heard that people were hanging out on Facebook. And I was like, oh, I'll give that a try. That sounds cool. And I got on Facebook in this 2014. And I spent a year just utterly aghast. Like it was a terrible experience because I discovered, much to my chagrin, that a lot of people I knew were very comfortable encouraging violence in public. And I kind of had a little credo in my head that if I saw someone, you know, celebrate or encourage violence, that would unfriend them, you know, that kind of thing. But I just, it was like the world changed color for me. You know, I just had no idea. And it was just yeah. that specific thing. You know, I argued on Facebook and I posted and I did all kinds of things. But I would consistently see people crossing this line where they were encouraging violence. And I couldn't believe it. I'd always thought my clique, which was really at that point liberals, mm-hmm. were the peace people. Mm-hmm. But it turns out when you give them all a microphone, they start talking about punching Nazis, killing cops, and all kinds of violent things. And of course, you know, 2 years later, Trump was elected, and you bet that I supported Trump in 2016 because I had spent 2 years, and if I'd gotten on a Facebook earlier, I probably would have been able to see more of it. I spent 2 years discovering what liberalism had become, and I didn't know. Yeah. But it had become that. And I knew I couldn't stay. I had to leave. I had to leave it. I knew I could not hang out with that kind of violence. I didn't know what to do, but I knew I had to split. And so I did. But it was really about violence mm-hmm. in the beginning. Of course, it became many other things. But at its heart, it was the left's embrace of violence. Starting, you know, it was Black Lives Matter, it was the rise of Trump, the rise of things they didn't like, etc.
Yeah, I feel like one other thing I liked about this reading was sort of bringing thought back potentially. Like, I feel like we do a lot of disparagement of thought, but I felt like in this reading there was a bit of the idea that good, like, actually thoughtful thought, real thought, can give self-grounding and history, but not as a form of a result. And
yeah, I really thought about anxiety when I read that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Right? Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah, I was actually thinking in terms of
just thought patterns.
Yeah.
Politics? Yeah.
But also what politics about? Because I feel like I feel like it's sort of the difference between thoughtfully and genuinely debating a topic or something, or debating something, or talking about the details of something versus saying, go punch a Nazi, or I heard an example recently was like, they just want, you know, if you cut whatever Medicaid, or if you want to cut something, they just want all these people to die. You know, these are just really kind of form of a result, a big result that is very detached from the actual discussion that's happening. So it's taking like a something that starts with a it starts with a something, a detail, starts with a detail, and then conflating it or expanding it or just taking it like 100 steps in one direction as opposed to like the next step.
Yeah.
Which is like anxiety as well, actually. That's actually a really good way to think about anxiety, is that something might be happening, but then instead of staying with what's actually happening, the details of that, and being thoughtful about it, like doing a major jump to, oh, this other terrible thing could happen, or, you know, they just want everyone to die or something. So, but that reminds me just of the sort of result focus and lack of reasoning that seems to come along with these sort of pushes for violence. Or it's also like, well, maybe at one point there was a logical, an actual logical thing that made sense to get to the point of saying, let's defund the police, you know, in some very specific instance or route or something. And then, but then you make that jump every time.
Yeah.
So it feels like a lack of reason, a reasoning error.
Yeah.
A kind of, I mean, thought is representation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. And I think it can be very easily used to, well, I don't know, it is being used to justify violence.
Yeah.
That kind of, you call it like just really fantastical thinking or.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which does have pretty strong parallels with anxiety as well, for sure, I think. Because that feels very similar to what happens in anxiety.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's it. I don't know. Something else to say?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that is the big theme of the week, has been the violence, left wing violence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there shouldn't be violence.
No.
All right.
Yeah.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Choya podcast. For more information, visit leapingchoya.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.